23rd, 1990, interview with F.T. Liu. This is the second tape, and the interviewer is Sutherland.
Mr. Liu, just for the record, I would like to ask you first if you would indicate what your position was when the Congo became independent and subsequently when the United Nations operation took place there.
Yes, I was at that time an officer in the trusteeship department. When the Secretary General's office was preparing a mission to the Congo, the mission of the person representative of the Secretary General, Ralph Bunche. Bunche called me and asked me to accompany him. So I was transferred then to Bunche's office. And then after that, I remained in that office. So at the time of the Congo operation, I was still officially with the trusteeship department, but I assumed the function of assistant, special assistant to Ralph Bunche.
And you accompanied Mr. Bunche then to the Congo before independence, right? Was the purpose to make a kind of a survey?
That's right. When the Belgium government announced its decision to grant independence to the Congo, and that was in January 1960, Dag Hammarskjöld was surprised and worried because he knew that the Congo was not ready for independence. And he saw many problems because of this lack of preparation. So he decided to send his most trusted collaborator, Ralph Bunche, as his personal representative for the independence ceremony. And he asked Bunche to set up, after independence, a large Bureau of Technical Assistance in order to help the new Congolese government.
And at that point, did Mr. Bunche and you already have contact with the new leaders of the Congo or not?
Some contact, yes. We arrived in Leopoldville on the 25th of August. Now, on that day, there was still no Congolese government. The Congolese representatives were elected, but there was a split among the leadership, mainly between the two main leaders, Kazavubu and Lumumba. So there were intense negotiations during these days in order to reach an agreement. Finally, the agreement was reached on the 26th of August, whereby Kazavubu would be made President of the Republic and Lumumba will assume the post of Prime Minister. When this was done, Bunche was in contact with Bomboko, who was slated to be Foreign Minister, and Thomas Kenza, who was to be appointed as the Minister for United Nations Affairs. During this period of 5 days between Bunche's arrival and the Congo independence, we were mainly in contact with the Belgium authorities, mainly the Belgium ambassador, who had the special position. He was to be member of the Congolese cabinet. You see, under the treaty which was to be concluded between the Congo and Belgium, the treaty of assistance and of friendship and cooperation. During this period, we were mainly in contact with Bomboko and Kenza. We saw Kazavubu and Lumumba only briefly during a ceremony. but we were later to see them much more after Independence Day.
What was the attitude of the Belgian ambassador at that point? If he was going to be a member of the cabinet, was he looking forward to United Nations assistance also at that
time? Oh yes. The Belgian government and the Belgian ambassador in particular, Ambassador Van der Bosch, was looking forward to cooperating with the UN, because they also know that the new Congo government would need a lot of assistance. The Belgium under the Treaty of Friendship was given a lot of assistance in terms of personnel, technicians and experts, and money, the financial aid, but they wanted the UN to help also.
So at that point there was a congenial relationship then. And
oh,
I believe that you had made a stop in Brussels before.
That's right. Before arriving in Leopoldville, we stopped for half a day in Brussels, where we saw the two Belgian ministers in charge of the Congo. And we discussed at some length with them about the Congolese problem. Perhaps here I could mention an episode which is quite interesting. Mr. Raymond Cheven, who was the Minister for the Economic Affairs concerning the Congo, gave to us the six main problems which the Congo government must face.
This was in Brussels.
That's in Brussels.
Right.
One was, of course, the new Congolese army, which will be led by a Belgian general. Another one is the financial aid. I think the Belgian government was going to give them, at the beginning, an aid of 2 billion Belgian francs. Then we noticed that for the sixth question, he mentioned the use of the Flemish language together with the French language in the radio stations. And we thought that was very strange that this should be considered as one of the major problems for the new Congo government.
In a sense, that was transferring the Belgian problem to the Congo.
Exactly.
That's interesting. But that never happened.
That never happened.
As a matter of fact, did anyone in the Congo speak Flemish?
No, but they hated Flemish much more than the Wallon, the French-speaking Belgians.
No. Why?
I don't know why. Probably they were more active. They were more Flemish businessmen in the Congo.
Uh-huh. Then, with independence, I assume that Ralph Bunche and you had rather direct contact with the new leaders of the government.
That's right, that's right. In fact, 2 days after independence, a long meeting was arranged between Bunche and Lumumba, during which Lumumba immediately raised the question of technical assistance. In particular, the Belgium at that time proposed a big project for the Engah Dam, because there is a big waterfall south of Leopoldville. There was a project of building a dam and a huge hydroelectric power plant, an aluminium plant, and that was a. The plan was given to Lumumba, but he had some misgivings. He didn't want the Belgium to take too much control of this, and he wanted the UN to advise him. And we discussed many other problems. Now here, during that meeting, which was extremely important, we realized for the first time that Lumumba was perhaps not quite ready for the important function, the very important functions of Prime Minister. We were sitting at the conference table in his office, a huge office, with a long table. He was at the end of the table. Bunche was sitting next to him on the left side. and I was sitting next to Bunch. Suddenly the telephone rang. The telephone was on his desk about 20 yards behind. He would say, excuse me. He would get up, go to the telephone, and they would say, qui est là? Who's there? And then he said, oh no, ma femme n'est pas ici. Téléphonez plus tard. My wife is not here. Please call later. Then he would come to us and apologize and resume the conversation. And that happened twice during that very important discussion. On other time, much later, when after the mutiny, and when the relations with the Belgium representatives soured, we suddenly receive an urgent message from Lumumba asking Bunch to go to his office for a very urgent meeting. So Bunch and I, we rushed to his office, and there he announced to us, and we were sitting the same way, you see, at the table, he announced that the Congo government has decided to sever diplomatic relations with the Belgium because of the mutiny, because of their harsh treatment of the Congo government. That was a very serious decision because of the huge assistance the Belgium government was given the Congo government. But the discussion was not on the economic or military matters. It was on a passport, because Lumumba has decided to go to Europe and the United States, and he needed the passport. And now that the diplomatic relations had been severed, the Congo government will have to issue its own passport. And then they were discussing about the form of the passport, the logo which of the Congo government, or the Congo government must choose. And in fact, he said that perhaps we should have a lion. You see, the lion is the symbol of power and independence. But then Gizenga, who was called to join us, said, no, we can't have a lion because the Belgians got the lion as a logo. You know, all these things came rather surprisingly, and shows that the Congolese leaders were really not ready for independence.
Right. Did you have any similar meetings with Kasavubu?
In Kasavubu, yes, we had the meeting later on. You see, when we went to Katanga to try to arrange for the deployment of UN troops in Katanga. So Bunch met Congo first during the very first trip. That was on the 4th of August 1960. And Dag Hammarskjöld met Tshombe later, 8 days later, when he himself went there in order to bring about the introduction of the UN troops in Katanga. Now, Tshombe gives a very different impression. He also was not ready for leadership, but he was smoother in his approach. He smiled, he says no, but he says no in smiling, whereas Lumumba will say no with a very stern face. But like Lumumba, he was not ready for the important function of leaders of an independent country.
What about Kasavubu?
Kasavubu was again different. He doesn't say much. In fact, he was like a Buddha. In fact, he looked like a Buddha. See, they even say that he was half Chinese. You know, there were some Chinese workers for the railroad which went there early in the century, and rumors had it that Kasavubu had some Chinese blood. Anyway, He doesn't talk much, so it's very difficult to say whether he knows much but didn't want to say anything, or he doesn't know anything and therefore remains silent.
And the other member of the team, so to speak, was Gizenga. What was he like?
Well, we didn't see much of Gizenga because he was really following Lumumba. He was a deputy prime minister, but he was really deputy to Lumumba. We understand that he is very more to the left than Lumumba himself.
And Thomas Kanza, who was, as you have said, the minister for United Nations,
yes,
liaison, he was associated with Lumumba or with Kasavubu?
Now, Thomas Kanza and Bomboko were the only two university graduates of the government. They were, he and Bomboko were more knowledgeable about political affairs. That was our impression, you see. And Kaza immediately came to us. He stayed with us quite often. He was a Lumumbist. In fact, he has always been a supporter of Lumumba, and he remained faithful to Lumumba after the split of Lumumba with Kasavubu.
Now, things developed very quickly in the Congo at this point. The split came very quickly between Kasavubu and Lumumba, really. Had you anticipated this? You had any indications in advance that the combination was not going to work?
Oh yes, from the very beginning. First, the agreement reached on the 26th August was reached after many long and difficult discussions. It was an uneasy alliance. They were never close together. Very soon, when we had our first problem with Lumumba, Kasavubu took a different stand, and he has several times criticized the position of Lumumba, and when Lumumba requested the withdrawal of the UN troops, because he did that at one time, Kasavubu strongly denounced this decision as irresponsible. So they were never close, and they split very fast. That last split, when Kasavubu decided to dismiss Lumumba, and Lumumba in turn dismissed Kasavubu, was almost an inevitable outcome of a very long feud.
And how soon was it evident that some of the Western countries were supporting Kasavubu?
Oh yes, there's no doubt about it. Their sympathy went to Kasavubu.
And that was clear from the beginning?
That was clear from the beginning. In fact, there was an incident on Independence Day, during the independence ceremony, which of course Bunch and I attended. We saw the ceremony was attended on the day by Kasavubu, the president, Lumumba, the prime minister, and the king of Belgium, Baudouin, who came for this occasion. So Kasavubu first made a speech, a very conciliatory speech, thanking Belgium for its help and for its decision to grant Congo independence. And then Lumumba rose, and he made a harsh speech. Fierce. He started with the history of the Congo. He recalled the very cruel way Leopold, the father of Baudouin, treated the Congolese. They were cutting their arms sometimes when they didn't pay the tax, and so on. A very harsh speech. At one time, the Belgian king, Baudouin, was about to leave the chair. We saw that very clearly. And his advisor would talk to him on the ear, and finally he resumed the chair. So there was a lot of going during that ceremony, which showed very clearly the sympathies, the views of the main players.
Now, I believe the American ambassador in Leopoldville at that point was a man named Claire Timberley. Did the American and the British ambassadors, along with the Belgian ambassador, seek to influence the United Nations operation, so to speak, or, for that matter, was it evident that they were seeking in some way to direct the policy of the new government?
They certainly tried to influence the bunch. A bunch being bunch, of course, is not someone you could influence very easily. You see, he was adamantly for the UN. His integrity is steely. They certainly tried to influence, but without much success. And their sympathy, as I said, would go to Kasavubu rather than.
Now, in these early days, Dag Hammarskjöld was still in New York. Ralph Bunche was in Leopoldville. Was their communication quite close in these days? Was so that Hammarskjöld knew exactly what was taking place in
the
Congo?
Oh, yes, yes. Bunche reports very regularly, first by cable, and later on the communication took place through telephone. Very often. In fact, again, if I may recall an episode which is quite interesting, one of the first problems we had took place before independence when Kenza told us that they have to choose a new name for the Congo, the former Belgium Congo. They wanted to call it the Republic of the Congo, but there was a problem because the neighbor north of the Congo River, which became independent a few months before, had already chosen the name of the Republic of the Congo. So they had to choose something else, but they don't know what. Naturally, a bunch said, of course, you're absolutely right. Perhaps it's better to choose something which would avoid confusion. And this discussion went on for one day and a half. But then the next day, in the evening, Kenza came to us saying that they decided to have the Republic of Congo, even though it could lead to some confusion, but they liked the name. So Bunche called Kébu Hammarskjöld. It was not an important matter, but Bunche always report on anything, even the least important ones, to Hammarskjöld. That was on a Friday. Then the next day, Bunche asked me whether to check downstairs whether there was any cable from New York. And I went downstairs and the hotel said no cables. In the afternoon, Bunche asked me again to check. And again, the answer was negative. And Sunday morning, Bunche said, well, there must be a cable. Go and check. I went to the hotel concierge. He said, no, absolutely not. Then Bunche said, why don't you go to the post office and check? It was a Sunday, but there was a service there, the cable service. I went there. The man in charge was a Belgian. They said, no, we didn't have anything for the United Nations. Then just at that time, just when I was about to leave, a Congolese messenger came He said, ah, there was something. It's called U-Nations. Now, 3 days ago, I went to the post office to register, to put our cable address, which was always U-Nations. So we chose U-Nations, Leopoldville. And that was duly registered. So the Congolese messenger said, oh yes, there was a cable addressed to U-Nations, but you told me to send it to Palais des Nations, because there was a confusion of Palais des Nations, U-Nations. So the cable went there. So we finally retrieved the cable. The cable just answered Ralph Bunch's first message, saying, well, it's regrettable to have now the name, the same name for two countries. That was all. But still, it shows that Bunch and Hammarskjöld always report, inform each other on various matters, the very important and the less important ones. And they always answer the cable.
So this actually is the reason that the Congo Leopoldville was known as that for quite a while, as opposed to the Congo Brazzaville.
Yeah, so what was decided at headquarters is to put Congo Brazzaville, Congo Leopoldville, between brackets.
Right, right, right. Now, the a fairly large number of troops began to arrive very quickly after the Security Council passed its first resolution authorizing the formation of one of them. And Ralph Bunch was technically the commander of the whole operation, is that right, at the beginning?
Yeah. Well, perhaps I should go back a little further.
Right.
Because as you recall, the mutiny took place on the 4th of July. On the 5th of July, it took place in Tisri, that is a location south of Leopoldville. On the 5th of July, it spread to Leopoldville. So we had the first impact. During the night of the 5th to the 6th, the Belgium ambassador came to see Bunch and said that he had a very disturbing news. The mutiny was spreading. The Congolese soldiers was attacking Belgium officers. And even worse, he's got the news that two Belgium women had been raped. He was receiving many calls from Belgium residents asking him to call the troops, the Belgium troops, out of the camps. There was two military camps which the Congo ceded to Belgium. In those camps you have quite a number of Belgium soldiers, and the Belgium ambassador, under the Treaty of Friendship and Cooperation, had the right to call these troops to help maintain law and order. So he said that he's under great pressure to call these troops, and he was considering doing it. Bunch immediately asked him whether he had the agreement of the Congolese government. The Belgium ambassador said that he has been talking to Lumumba and seeking his agreement, but Lumumba adamantly refused. Bunch thereby said that in that case, you shouldn't call the Belgium troops, because you could only make the situation worse. You might protect some Belgium residents in the big city, but there were many Belgians in the country, and their fate would be much worse. They would be more jeopardized with the Belgium intervention. The Belgium ambassador agreed. From then on, that's the 6th of July until the 10th of July, Bunch and Hammarskjöld work very closely together to get a group of military, the UN military observers and experts to be assigned to the Congolese government in order to control the army and help maintain law and order. In order to get this, the Secretary General would need an official request from the Congo government. And he thought that if he had a request, and if the request is worded as a technical assistance of a military nature rather than military assistance, he could take action on his own initiative without going to the Security Council. So that was what we were working on. And finally, on the 10th of July, Bunch persuaded Kazabuku and Lumumba to send jointly that official request. Unfortunately, one day later, the Belgian government decided to send Belgian troops
without,
into the Congo.
Without the permission.
Without the permission of Lumumba. When this is done, of course, we have a wholly new situation. So Hammarskjöld received on the 10th a request for technical assistance of military nature, and he was working on it. He was in contact with the Tunisian government, notably, to get a sizable number of Tunisian officers, and also Moroccan officers, and from officer from some other French-speaking countries. But once the Belgium government decided on the military intervention, that was on the 11th, the Belgium troops arrived in Luluaburg and Elisabethville, and shortly after the arrival of the UN troops, the Belgium troops in Elisabethville, Tshombe, no doubt with the help of the Belgium troops, proclaimed the secession of Katanga. With this, as I said, there's a wholly new situation. Kazabuku and Lumumba, on the 12th of July, sent another request, but this time protesting the invasion of Belgium troops and requesting UN military assistance in order to bring about the withdrawal of Belgium troops and to help the Congolese government to maintain law and order. So once this happened, Hammarskjöld has to take action on the second request, discard the first request, and bring the matter to the Security Council, which he did, invoking Article 99 for the first time in UN history.
Yes, I wanted to ask about that. Of course, you were in the Congo at that point and not in New York. But from your knowledge, why was it necessary for Dag Hammarskjöld to invoke Article 99? Why was no other country prepared to raise the matter in the Council?
I believe that the Security Council could convene without Article 99. But I think Dag Hammarskjöld wanted to stress the importance of this problem. He attached a lot of importance to this problem because, as you know, 1960 was the decolonization year. It is this year that the decolonization process started in full force. And he thought that what happened to the Congo would be extremely important because of the timing, because Congo has a unique strategic position, and because also the Congo had very great natural resources. And therefore, he wanted to do something in order to settle the problem of the Congo.
So in a sense, you're suggesting that Hammarskjöld did it in a way to emphasize the importance that he
had tried
to do.
Yes, and also I think there was a real importance from the viewpoint of the maintenance of international peace and security, because the Congo was so important that any vacuum power could lead to the intervention of the two superpowers. In fact, as you know, the two superpowers were very closely involved in the events in the Congo.
Yes, and was that apparent in Leopoldville? I've mentioned the American ambassador and the Belgian ambassador. I'm wondering about the Russian ambassador. Was he active at all at this point?
Yes, he was active. We didn't see him, but he was active. He was close to Lumumba and Kizenga.
So unlike the American and Belgian and other Western ambassadors, the Soviet ambassador did not deal very much with the UN representatives?
No, not at the time.
I see, I see. The Secretary General then came to the Congo shortly after this, after the Security Council resolution. And could you describe the situation a little bit when he arrived in the Congo for the first time?
Yeah. When he arrived, the situation was already tense. At the very beginning, during the first days of independence, the relationship between UN and the Congo were excellent. It was a honeymoon. When the Security Council passed the resolution, and when the first UN troops, and the first troops were the Tunisians, arrived there, less than 36 hours after the adoption of the security resolution, the relation became even better. Now, we were immediately deployed in Leopoldville, and then suddenly the situation became quiet. There were, before the arrival, a lot of incidents and quite a number of casualties. And when the UN arrived, everything became quiet, and the Congo government welcomed the UN without any misgivings, you see, wholehearted. And then we immediately started to work on the withdrawal of the Belgian troops. In fact, the resolution contained two main points. It requested the Belgian government to withdraw its troops as soon as possible. Then it authorized the Secretary General to give military assistance to the Congo government to facilitate the withdrawal of the Belgian troops and to help the government in maintaining law and order. And the UN plans was to bring about the withdrawal of the Belgian troops by negotiation. That is the usual practice. We are not a enforcement action. We are a peacekeeping force. So immediately, Bunch initiated negotiation with the Belgian ambassador in Leopoldville. The Belgian government's position, which was stated very clearly during the Security Council debate, is that the Belgian government had no aggressive intention at all against the Congo. What they wanted was to protect the Belgian nationals, and therefore if the UN force can accomplish that role, they would withdraw immediately. So in the negotiation, it was agreed that the UN would deploy in the various areas as soon as possible, and when they arrive, the Belgian troop would leave. And that would start with Leopoldville. In Leopoldville, an agreement was reached. The troops arrived on the 15th, evening of the 15th of July. The Belgium troops started to withdraw on the 17th, and they completed the withdrawal on the 23rd. And the same procedure was followed everywhere else. So by the end of July, every all the Belgian troops were withdrawn from the Congo except Katanga. Now, when we went, when Bunch got the agreement with the Belgium and saw Lumumba, he saw that Lumumba will congratulate him, that Lumumba will be very pleased, but not at all. Lumumba's reply was bitter. He said that you don't have to negotiate, he told Bunch, you don't have to negotiate with the Belgium, you have to throw them out, and immediately. Naturally, Bunch tried to explain what a peacekeeping operation was, but we realized that Lumumba had not a clue of what the UN was and what UN could do or could not do. He thought that since the Security Council was giving him military assistance, was sending a UN troops to help his government, the troops must be at his under his order and do what he wants, what he. And that was the basic misunderstanding. So from then on, the relationship became tense. And as the Belgian troops took some time to withdraw, he became more and more impatient.